Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to Inside Politics. I'm John King in Washington. Thank you for sharing your day with us. Relieved of duty. CNN just learning moments ago, a sixth officer now put on administrative leave from the Memphis police force. And the brutal beating of Tyree Nichols conjures a familiar question and painful memories of mischances. That as Congress and communities nationwide look again at what can be done to change the way cops police. Plus, this week, President Joe Biden, the House Speaker Kevin McCarthy meet. A debt ceiling stalemate that shows zero signs of ending is issue one. And it is also a consequential early test of divided government. And today, the American Secretary of State is in Israel. The backdrop for his visit, a string of death and destruction, raids, synagogue shootings, settler attacks, and promises of retribution as tensions between Israelis and Palestinians combust. Up first for us, though, word of more change in Memphis. A Memphis police major says a sixth police officer has now been relieved of duty, that in connection the stop and subsequent beating that led to the death of Tyree Nichols. It follows, of course, an important weekend development. The so-called Scorpion Unit, a Memphis police team meant to corral street crime, no longer exists. That after the city's police chief decided she would shutter it. Its officers included the five fired cops who subdued, pepper sprayed, tased, tackled, punched, kicked, kicked again, hit with a baton, and throttled Tyree Nichols. Let's get straight to CNN's Nick Valencia for the latest development. Nick, what are we learning?
Well, I just got off the phone with the Memphis Police Department. They tell me that a sixth officer that was involved in the traffic stop that led to the death of Tyree Nichols has now been, quote, relieved of duty, put on administrative leave. This officer, identified as Preston Hemphill, has been with the Memphis Police Department since 2018, according to the department. What we don't know right now, John, is his level of involvement in the arrest or who he was in the video. We don't know either of whether or not he was involved in this Scorpion unit. But here's what the Memphis police had to tell me in a text message a short time ago, saying that Hemphill was relieved of duty with the other officers, going on to say, remember, we said this is an investigation is ongoing. They added that more information will be shared as it develops. But this fallout clearly continuing as a result of what happened to Tyree Nichols in Memphis on January 7th. John.
Nick Valencia. Appreciate the live update. Keep in touch as we learn more throughout the day. And that horrible video, of course, capturing the police brutality that eventually ended Tyree Nichols' life, is again putting police reform on the front burner here in Washington. The Nichols family will attend next week's State of the Union address. The Congressional Black Caucus wants an audience at the White House to talk through how to remake police and how to get President Biden to make it a constant focus. Sunday here on CNN, a plea from Benjamin Crump on behalf of Tyree Nichols' family for lawmakers to act and to save lives.
Shame on us if we don't use his tragic death to finally get the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act passed. We told President Biden that when he talked to us because, you know, he should marshal the United States Senate with Senator Booker, Senator Schumer, and they should try to get the House to re-engage. If not, Dana, we're going to continue to see hashtag.
With me in studio to share their insights, the executive director of the Advancement Project, Judith Brown Dianis, former the deputy director of the FBI, Andrew McCabe, CNN's Lauren Fox, and Robert Samuels. He's a journalist and the co-author of the book, His Name is George Floyd. Thank you, everybody, for being here. It's a difficult conversation. Judith, let me just start with what we just heard from Nick Valencia. One of the differences people are talking about, we'll come to Washington and see if there can actually be congressional action, but one of the differences people are talking about is the swift action, the charges against the five officers, now another officer placed on administrative leave. Does that make, when you get to the bigger issues that you believe need to be discussed urgently, is this, as Mr. Crump says, a blueprint?
Well, it's important because we have to have action when these things happen. We have to start the mechanisms of accountability very quickly. And in fact, it's important to know that this community had been working on policing issues. So this didn't just happen because of this one death. Which was horrible and horrific, but there had been a lot of other problems. And so communities had been coming together to push for transparency and accountability before this.
And so, Lauren, you've been at this table before, after the death of George Floyd, after Mr. Crump goes through the litany of cases in the past where it looks like, okay, you have the attention of Congress, will you do anything? The last hang-up to the George Floyd Policing Act was in the United States Senate. Among those who were skeptical at the time, Lindsey Graham over the weekend, saying, I oppose civil lawsuits against individual officers. However, holding police departments accountable makes sense, and they should face liability for the misconduct of their officers. If we were rewinding the tape 6 months or a year ago, maybe you would say, aha, a potential breakthrough in the Senate. But we now have a Republican House, and the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Jim Jordan, over the weekend making crystal clear, yes, what happened to Tyre Nichols, he says, is reprehensible and horrible. Evil, I think, was the word he used. But he says no law can fix it.
I don't know that there's any law that can stop that evil that we saw. So I don't know that any law, any training, any reform is going to change. It's just a difference in I think, a philosophy. The Democrats always think that it's a new law that's going to fix something that terrible.
Sadly, had to have a lot of conversations with law enforcement officials in recent days, and they disagree with Chairman Jordan, saying training, you're not going to wipe this out. A law is not going to wipe it out, but training, sensitivity training, more accountability is critical, but it sounded like he's not interested.
Yeah, I mean, in the Senate, they've gotten close in the past on this issue of policing reform. I mean, the most significant effort, of course, happening with Tim Scott just about more than a year ago, but they didn't finish the deal. And now the politics have completely shifted. You have Jim Jordan leading the key committee that would investigate this issue. And you have him here saying, there's nothing we can do. My hands are tied, essentially shutting the door before a conversation can even begin.
And so Val Demings, a former police chief, former member of Congress, who knows this town and knows how, again, we're having an adult conversation at a table. It's a rare event in this town, unfortunately, these days. She says if Washington won't act, this is going to come down to her former colleagues, police chiefs around the country.
There's not much of an appetite, we know, in Washington, D.C. now to come up with the national standards that I believe are so desperately needed. This falls back now on police executives, our chiefs, our sheriffs, to come up with much needed reforms that start with hiring the brightest and the best, having psychological evaluations being a part of that to ensure fitness for duty.
I think most would argue everybody has a role. Every level of government has a role. Every citizen has a role. But could this be an example, Andy, where you do have experiments out in the states or in cities that turn out to be the shining examples and you say, everybody says, let's copy that?
Sure, you could, right? And once again, those responsibilities are going to fall on the backs of police chiefs who are constantly stressed to do more, to do better with fewer resources and under tougher circumstances. But let's embrace the reality here. There are over 17,000 separate independent police agencies in this country. And to think that you're going to get a consistent response on things like training and hiring and direction and supervision over law enforcement is just not going to happen across a span that of control that wide without some significant federal regulation underneath it.
I was reading, number one, I've read your book and it's fascinating, and your partner on the book, Tolu, is a frequent guest here on the program. I was reading your reaction on Twitter over the weekend where you just talk about your personal exhaustion from spending so much time reporting on these issues. Here you have another tragedy that one would hope would at least start conversations. I don't pretend to be smart enough to understand the solutions, but I think it would be if all the stakeholders would get in the room and start talking, they would get some. Just walk through, do you have any reason to believe that Tyre Nichols will get us to a place, get a conversation to a place that everybody thought maybe George Floyd would, but it didn't?
Well, with Tyre Nichols, we're seeing something we hoped we would never see again, but yet we're still not surprised we saw. And when we look at the response, we see some things that seem like bright lights, right? We see the fact that there was a police chief who acted relatively quickly. We see the fact that officers were indicted. We saw the questioning of a police report. But that doesn't get to the fundamentals of the issue, though, right? And when we look at the fundamental issues, what we discovered in the book was if there's no true discussion about the hearts of the problem in terms of thinking about training for police officers, in terms of thinking about how we think about bias and who deserves to be treated with such heinous uses of force, you cannot fully get to the heart of a solution.
So how?
Yeah.
How do you start the conversation? And it's incredibly complicated. And like mm-hmm. anything that involves systemic issues, systemic racism, it's going to take years. There's no easy solution. But how would you piece together the what must start at the local level and what Washington's role should be?
So here's our problem, is that the foundation of policing was wrong from the beginning, starting off with slave patrols, moving into the way in which they controlled civil rights protesters in the 60s and 70s. And so the foundation and the DNA of the system is wrong. And so we have to be thinking about not reimagining policing, but reimagining safety. How do we stop the interactions with police? Over 1,000 Americans are stopped by the police every day in a traffic stop. There are cities that are saying, no more. We're taking police out of that. We should take police out of mental health incidents. And so we're able to provide safety in a different way because those of us in the Black community, number one, knew Black cops bleed blue, that they will do this to us just like everyone else, that this isn't just about death, but it's about the daily terror that Black people actually encounter because we are hyper-policed. And so the deaths are one thing, but every day Black folks are actually experiencing this. And so what we have to see is a difference in how we create safety. Why are we criminalizing people who are homeless? Why don't we give them a home? Those are the kinds of things that the Black community would prefer to see instead of getting more police. You know, President Biden, 100,000 more police. We don't need them. We need to change the way we think about safety.
And so as you try to do that, you see the debate already playing out. Chief Davis in Memphis pretty quickly disbanded the Scorpion unit, right? Said it well-intentioned maybe when they drew it up, but not working in this case. This is Mayor Adams. So in New York City, himself, a former police officer, says not all of these specialized units are bad.
Units don't create abuse. Abusive behavior creates abuse. You can be assigned to uniform patrol if you don't have the right mindset for public protection. And I think the nobility of being a law enforcement officer, then you should not be assigned in the police department.
So you have a Democrat there who has very good relations with the White House. Again, I get back to the point, how do you get people who understand this in a room to work this out and maybe say, you know, this works here, but it doesn't work here.
Right. First of all, it's the right thing to do to get rid of the Scorpion unit in Memphis. That could not continue. There's no reason anyone in Memphis should feel any level of confidence or trust in anyone associated with that unit. However, you can't and shouldn't throw out the entire idea of specialized units because of the abuse and poor performance of even a handful of units. It comes down to the elements of supervisory control, training, and culture, quite frankly. You're absolutely right. There are elements of law enforcement, not just in specialized units, but across the community that reinforce baked-in ideas, biases. They take that approach to their policing out on the street, and that's where you begin to see these problems. It's not isolated to specialized units, but it's also not the majority of cops that are patrolling our streets every day. So it's a matter of addressing that culture.
You spend a lot of time in the community. That's where your exhaustion comes from. Is there any hope that having the Nichols family in the box at the State of the Union, essentially, the president would touch on it anyway, but trying to convince him, spend more time on this, that maybe the president will decide, you know what, I'm going to make this a constant focus. I'm not just going to mention it in a speech or have one or two events. I'm going to make it a constant focus. Any hope?
Well, the Floyd family did a lot of events and they did a lot of things with the president, right? But what we saw when we saw the George Floyd in Policing Act was that when it came down to Congress, there was a debate that seems perennial when you have when you think about progress in the Black community. Do you do something small or do you take a big swing? That was really the debate between Senator Scott and Senator Booker. And so what I think the situation calls for people who have to deal with the daily terror of being in fear of what a police officer might do to them, they say it's time for a big swing. That's the message that the Nichols family had. That's the message that the Floyd family had. The question is whether or not we can do enough to meet them where they are.
That's a great way to put the question, and we will see in the days ahead. I thank you, everybody, for coming in. Lauren's going to stay with us. Up next for us, Washington politics, deal or dysfunction. President Biden said to meet with the House Speaker Kevin McCarthy this week amid a bitter standoff over the debt ceiling. It's getting to know you and test you week for the president and the new House Speaker. Kevin McCarthy will visit the White House on Wednesday. The first thing on the agenda, the looming debt ceiling crisis. Speaker McCarthy knows the divide is huge, but says he will enter this meeting hopeful.
Our whole government is designed to find compromise. I want to find a reasonable and a responsible way that we can lift the debt ceiling but take control of this runaway spending. Now, I know his staff tries to say something different, but I think the president is going to be willing to make an agreement together.
Joining our conversation, USA Today's Francesca Chambers, Margaret Talib of Axios, and CNN's Lauren Fox is still with us. If you listen to the speaker there, he's going to come down to the White House on Wednesday, and President Biden's going to say, sure, I'll negotiate. Not going to happen, right?
Well, the White House is still saying that that is not going to happen when the two men meet on Wednesday. But what they do say is that the president is willing to talk about spending cuts, but they want to see a plan from Speaker McCarthy on what he would cut. If not Social Security, if not Medicare, what are these defense cuts potentially? What are the other cuts? And so they're basically pressing him at this point to arrive with a plan.
And that's a key point you make in the sense that if you're the White House or the Democrats on Capitol Hill right now, you see McCarthy is still trying to sort of negotiate in his family, if you will. How long is his leash? What is he willing to do? Because he has promised more conservative members at least votes on some things. And on the weekend, heading into this meeting, to your point about Social Security and Medicare, there are some Republicans who say, hey, to balance the budget, you at least have to think about it. You at least have to put it on the table. Speaker McCarthy says no.
Are you willing to consider any reductions to Social Security and Medicare?
No, let's take those off the table.
Is defense spending on the table?
Well, look, I want to make sure we're protected in our defense spending, but I want to make sure it's effective and efficient. I want to look at every single dollar we're spending, no matter where it's being spent. I want to eliminate waste wherever it is.
From the White House or the Democratic perspective, how much of this is, especially the first couple of meetings, because there'll be more than one, is specifically about the debt ceiling or more about trying to test how long is his leash?
It really is both. If from the Democrats' perspective, if McCarthy is facing internal strife, that weakens his ability to mess things up for them. That's the politics, the political reality. The other political reality comes in June and on the way to June when we're really in a high-risk situation. But here's the reality. When you look at the drivers of the national debt, guess what? Social Security is the top one. Medicare is right up there, and so is defense spending. You know what another driver of the national debt is? Tax cuts that aren't paid for, that are permanent or long-term in perpetuity. And so I think Biden's position that he's not going to negotiate is a negotiating position to some extent. But also, if you really did, if the nation wanted to tackle this problem and get debt under control, they would have to look, guess what, at Social Security and at Medicare. Both parties would have to look at it seriously and be willing to take major political hits for it. And no one is willing to do that right now, which is why this really lives in the realm of politics.
Right. And the traditional way to do that is some bipartisan commission, but they don't even have the trust to do one of those right now. Nobody
can even do a one-partisan commission.
Right.
The parties in themselves can't agree on the right fix to this.
Right. And so part of the question is, what did the midterm election mean in the sense that you do have a House majority? So the House Republicans have every right to say, it was Democrats last year. The American people sent us here. They sent us with a new majority. But it's a tiny majority, nowhere near the size they thought they were going to have. Still, one of McCarthy's key deputies say the president has to listen.
So the fact that now Speaker McCarthy is sitting down with President Joe Biden on Wednesday, that is a win for House Republicans. You ask the average hardworking American family, they understand that we have to tighten our belts and look for responsible spending. This dismissiveness from Joe Biden is just unacceptable, and it ignores the fact that we won on the economic issues this past election cycle.
How is that processed up on the Hill among Democrats and Republicans? Because they did win the majority. Now, the president says, I'll talk to you about spending, but not on the debt ceiling. They're two separate issues. These are bills, to your point, 25% of that debt was run up during the Trump administration. All right. So let's deal with that. Then we'll talk. The Republicans say no.
Well, Democrats, from their perspective, want to dare Republicans to do a couple of things. One is put out a plan, and two, can you actually agree on it? That narrow margin is key, and the views of moderate Republicans and hardliner Republicans like Chip Roy are vastly different. People who have to run in a district that Joe Biden won are going to have a very different opinion on cuts or changes to Social Security and Medicare than other Republicans may in their hardline districts. So I think Democrats are sort of taking a seat back, letting the White House lead on this and saying, go ahead, show us your plan and then see if you can even agree upon it.
Go
because
ahead and have the vote on the 30%.
Exactly. Have the vote plan. On the tax, have the vote on the spending cuts. We're happy to sit back and vote against those and let you guys see if you can even get the votes for it.
So let the Republicans fight it out first, see Absolutely. If they really have unity and strength. All right, we'll watch. Just Wednesday will be just the beginning. We're going to be at this for a while. Up next, Donald Trump back on the campaign trail, lying still about the 2020 election and taking aim at potential 2024 Republican rivals. We'll bring you some important news just into CNN. Sources now telling us the former chief of the National Enquirer, David Pecker, is expected to meet with New York prosecutors investigating the former president of the United States. Let's bring in CNN's Kara Scannell for more. Kara, what does this tell us?
Yeah, John, so sources tell us that David Pecker, who is the former publisher of the National Enquirer, is set to meet with prosecutors with Manhattan District Attorney's Office as soon as this week. And this office has really stepped up its investigative steps in recent weeks, looking into the hush money payments that were made to Stormy Daniels, the former the adult film star, to stop her from going public with allegations that she had an affair with former President Donald Trump just before the 2016 presidential campaign. Sources previously told us that Michael Cohen had gone in just 2 weeks ago to meet with the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. He had not met with them in more than a year. And they've also, the prosecutors have also reached out to the attorney for Stormy Daniels, saying that they may want to speak with him again. So we're starting to see the pace of this investigation really kind of restarting, kicking into a new gear this year, all after the DA's office won a conviction of the Trump Organization entities last year for tax crimes. John?
All the money, I guess, would be the question there. Kara Scannell, appreciate the update. Keep us posted as it plays out. This coming as Donald Trump now is road testing his 2024 pitch and promising to prove wrong those who say most Republican voters will be ready to move on. Two weekend events, one in New Hampshire, one in South Carolina. Donald Trump's first campaign travels since his announcement 2 months ago. The former president seemed determined to rebut Republicans who want new blood atop the ticket.
This campaign will be about the future. This campaign will be about issues. Joe Biden has put America on the fast track to ruin and destruction, and we will ensure that he does not receive 4 more years.
But Trump, being Trump, rattled through a litany of his trademark grievances.
We're going to restore election integrity. We have to. You go to New York, nobody ever gets prosecuted. I'm the only one they go after. They're sending people that are killers, murderers. They're sending rapists, and they're sending, frankly, terrorists. We have a woke military that can't fight or win. And the wind turbines are all made in China.
Our great reporters are back with us. Interesting to watch because we haven't seen him out since his announcement. So you see him and hear from him. If you are a mainstream Republican who thinks we lost 2018, 2020, and 2022 because of Donald Trump, to hear that last part has to make you cringe.
Yeah, you're not sure. And so, you know, we know what the dynamics of this are. If this is ends up being a field with 18 candidates, it probably plays to Donald Trump's strengths because he still has a part of the base. But that kind of middle of the base, the part of the base that's more pragmatic and less kind of core ideological or moved by those arguments, they want to see if there's a better alternative. Early on, and it's very early on still, Ron DeSantis, you know, has taken the spot as that guy, but there is only one announced candidate. And we are seeing a flip-flop of the dynamics last time around in 2016, where the primary was underway and Trump came late to the game and, you know, down an escalator and there it is. And now he's the first guy in the water. And everyone else is like, going to take my time and let this play out for a while.
But when he joined last time, he quickly started to get on the debate stage, and I called him the human chainsaw. He just took out, you know, men of considerably more political experience, campaign experience, and that was Trump. And you can tell he's trying to discourage people this time as well. You mentioned DeSantis, so let's just show it. This is a University of New Hampshire poll taken just last week. Ron DeSantis, 42, Donald Trump, 30, and then the others are way down. Nikki Haley, 8%, the governor of New Hampshire, 4%, Liz Cheney, 4%. But in his remarks as he traveled, Trump at the moment seems to be thinking a lot about DeSantis and Nikki Haley.
Nikki Haley called me the other day to talk to me. I talked to her for a little while. But I said, look, you know, go by your heart if you want to run. She's publicly stated I would never run against my president. He was a great president. Florida was actually closed for a very long period of time. Remember, he closed the beaches and everything else. You know, it's, they're trying to rewrite history.
That was a calm Donald Trump, essentially telling them and anyone else thinking about getting in, remember what I did last time.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest untested challenges against Donald Trump for other Republicans trying to weigh if they're going to get into this race is how do you come at him? Do you come straight at him? Do you ignore him? Do you pretend that he's not in this race? You know, he's happy to discuss by name other candidates who are thinking about running, including disclosing, you know, Nikki Haley told me she'd never run. This could be disloyal if she goes ahead and does that. I think it's just unclear what strategy actually works when you're trying to come up against Donald Trump, and it's untested. And if somebody doesn't get in the race soon, we just won't see how that's going to play out until we have
a and that's the key point. Who's next, right? Yeah. Who's next? You know that DeSantis is building a team. Haley's building a team. Mike Pompeo's building a team. Others are building a team. Looking at it, including the governor of New Hampshire, a Republican. They hold the first primary. Chris Sununu, who says, thinking about it.
I don't have a timeline. I mean, obviously folks are talking about it, but I really don't have a timeline. I'm spending a lot of time nationally trying to grow the party as Republicans. The government is not the solution to cultural issues, and we have a cultural problem. But the government isn't going to come down with a big, heavy hammer and solve that problem.
That's a sitting governor, often a strength for, you know, presidential candidates of both parties, someone who's been an executive. You spoke recently to a former governor, Asa Hutchinson, just left the Arkansas governorships. He said, quote, there's a consensus there will be alternatives to Donald Trump. And he stressed, I should be in each of those conversations. Well, to guarantee you're in each of those conversations, you have to say, I, Asa Hutchinson, declare my candidacy.
Yeah.
When?
Which he doesn't want to do yet. He still says that he hasn't made a decision on that, but he did indicate that he will do so in the next few months. He says he thinks that he has to do that in the first half of the year. And I spoke to Chris Sununu recently also. He also said that he's considering it, but currently he's traveling. And the reason that he did the interview, he said, is because I asked. And so he says people keep asking him, and that's why he keeps talking about it, but that he's not necessarily in it either.
But there is a dynamic here, and that is that as long as the other candidates are presume that they will get in at some point but are not in, this early primary is Donald Trump against himself and Donald Trump against law enforcement and various investigations. The minute other people enter the race, it becomes these candidates against one another. It dilutes that negative focus, and these candidates are counting on, to some extent, Trump to erode his own standing before they get in.
Right. And so how do you make that calculation of how long can you wait to let that play out? But you got to build a team. You got to raise money. It's hard. It's a daunting organizational task and financial task. We will see. Just in to us, the Justice Department refusing to hand over some key information to the Republican Oversight Chairman up on Capitol Hill. We'll explain after this. More news just into CNN. The Justice Department now telling the House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan it will not provide most of the documents Chairman Jordan has requested about the special counsel's probe into President Biden's handling of classified documents, at least for now, DOJ says. In a letter obtained by CNN, the department says it needs to complete its investigation first. Our CNN legal analyst, Elliot Williams, joins our panel. Sometimes this is a no, go away. Sometimes the first no is the beginning of a negotiation. Noteworthy, we'll get to the politics in a minute. The House Republicans want to know about Joe Biden. They're not asking about Donald Trump or Mike Pence. Shocking. But just on the process here, is this a flat no until the special counsel's done and DOJ's done, or is it let's talk?
It most certainly is not a flat no. And frankly, the most important words in your intro there were at least for now. I signed letters like this throughout my entire time in the Justice Department and Department of Homeland Security. Look, Congress sort of tends to see itself as, because we have background checks and because we're the Congress for the American people, you can just trust us with information. This is active evidence in a criminal investigation. And a lot of the people being investigated or looked at don't know they are, right? It's not just about the president. It's record keepers, it's assistants, and so on. You don't want to risk spooking witnesses and so on. It is private information for now, but in almost every circumstance, they end up finding some agreement at the end and turning something over, but just not today.
And so if you go across to the Senate, which most people in Washington think is more adult than the House, most people were saying, you have the Senate Intelligence Committee, which operates on a bipartisan basis. And you have Mark Warner, who's the chairman because the Democrats are on the show. But Marco Rubio is essentially the co-chairman of that committee there. They, too, say, we want to see this record. So to Elliot's point, they say, we are the most sensitive committee in the chamber. We need to know. Listen to them.
Our job's not to figure out if somebody mishandled those, but our job is to make sure there's not an intelligence compromise. The notion that we're going to be left in limbo and we can't do our job, that just cannot stand.
And it's not about being nosy. You know, here's the bottom line. If, in fact, those documents were very sensitive, materials were sensitive, and they pose a counterintelligence or national security threat to the United States, then the intelligence agencies are tasked with the job of coming up with ways to mitigate that.
Sounds reasonable, if you will. They say they're just trying to do our jobs. Has national security been compromised? But can the Justice Department say, we'll cooperate with you because you sound like an adult, but we don't trust the House, so we won't cooperate with them? Can't happen, right?
Well, no, but this is a very different ask, I think, from these chairmen in the Senate than what we are seeing in the House of Representatives. And that is because they want to know about the documents themselves and whether or not any state secrets were spilled in the way that these were handled, not how they were handled, not who was involved in the handling of these documents, not what Joe Biden did or didn't do. They want to know specifically what is this information, and we need to make sure that national security isn't compromised. So I do think there's just a slight difference in what these folks are all asking for.
Right. If you listen to Senator Rubio and Senator Warner, it's about the substance and about national security. Again, we'll see how it plays out. The Senate's not perfect either. But this is James Comer, who's the new chairman of the House Oversight and Accountability Committee. He wants to see some of these, too. And again, they want to know all about Joe Biden. There's a similar issue, much more serious, most people would say, about a guy named Donald Trump. But
you've also talked about how you worried about the same situation with the Trump family. Trump had 300 plus documents at Mar-a-Lago. Why don't you have that same concern? I mean, there are visitors going in and out of Mar-a-Lago from different countries, including China. There's been a Chinese spy who was arrested at Mar-a-Lago, and it was in an unsecure location at Mar-a-Lago. So would you apply that same concern evenly across the board?
If someone can show me evidence that there was influence peddling with those classified documents that were in the possession of President Trump, then we would certainly expand that.
Why does it have to be influence pending? And B, Chairman Comer knows the Justice Department got a search warrant because they had A, testimony from a witness, and B, video evidence from surveillance cameras that there was something wrong happening at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, what can I possibly add to that? It sort of speaks for itself, right? I mean, there's a highly political and a highly performative aspect to the public request, the public posturing for these things. But I think whether it's the House or whether it's the Senate, whether it's just the GOP conference or whether it's bipartisan leadership, the committee chairs and rankings in Congress in both chambers are doing what you would expect them to do. They are trying to get as much as they can so that they can take a piece of this action and reveal things for whatever reasons. And the Justice Department is doing what its role is, which is to try to firewall off the stuff that's truly sensitive and that if it got into the wrong hands and became politicized, could actually jeopardize, right, their investigation. I'd say two differences. One, we know, I think, a lot more about the documents in Donald Trump's possession because of the warrants. We know almost nothing publicly. The public knows almost nothing about the Biden documents. So there is a public desire, I think, to have at least a basic understanding of what some of that is. But the other is Congress plays a role investigatively in bringing things to the public's attention so that the Justice Department, in some cases, can take the ball and run with it. The Justice Department has taken the ball and is running with a lot of things at this point. So I don't think Congress is needed for that part of the airing of this.
And the White House gets a cushion for right now being able to say, call the Justice Department. Don't ask the White House when the Republicans in Congress ask for things, right?
except when it comes to the political aspect of it, which they've accused Republicans of trying to politicize it. And the White House is trying to turn the table on Republicans and saying, but wait a minute, Donald Trump has said that he has tapes of Mar-a-Lago. He has security camera footage. So why don't you ask for that as well as what you're asking for from us? But what you said, Margaret, about Americans and how they're perceiving this, there was polling over the weekend that showed that 67% of Americans think that they both mishandled this information. And so they're not drawing some of the distinctions that you are, partially because they haven't seen the documents.
We'll see how this one plays out when we come back. America's top diplomat meeting with a familiar face in Israel today. This as violence rages across the region. Right now, the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, is in Israel. It is his first visit to the country under the new Netanyahu government, and it comes after a weekend of terror across the region. America's top diplomat calling the violence, quote, a horrifying surge. Let's go live. CNN's Hadas Gold live for us in Jerusalem. Diplomacy or hand-wringing?
Probably both. I mean, this visit was set to be a little bit prickly even before the events of the last few days, because, as you noted, it's the first time that Blinken is meeting not necessarily with Netanyahu, who's an old face here, but his new government is the most right wing in Israeli history. And the Americans have already said that they decided they're going to judge this government on its policies, not on the personalities, because some of the personalities were once considered the extreme right wing fringe of Israeli politics, and now they're in positions of power. But this visit got a new sense of urgency over the events of the last few days. As you noted, last week was one of the deadliest days for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Then you had that shooting on Friday evening outside the synagogue in northeast Jerusalem. And then another shooting Saturday morning, also outside of the old city of Jerusalem. And Antony Blinken making a call really for everyone to try to do anything they can to really de-escalate what's really become a boiling situation here. Take a listen.
We're urging all sides now to take urgent steps to restore calm, to de-escalate. We also remain committed to supporting religious coexistence and diversity, including in Jerusalem.
And what's really interesting, Benjamin Netanyahu, in his remarks alongside Blinken, he sort of skirted around the tense situation on the ground, instead saying that he wants to expand the Abraham Accords because he believes that by adding more countries to normalize the relations with Israel, then that will help open the path up to a solution, he said, with the Palestinians. John.
Das Gold at a tense time in Jerusalem. Appreciate the live report. Thank you. Ahead for us, CNN spots a very much in the news lately visitor leaving the new House Speaker's office. We'll tell you who next. Topping our political radar today, quote, yes, I did. That short, straightforward answer this hour from the House Speaker Kevin McCarthy to CNN questions about whether he met with the confirmed congressional liar, George Santos. CNN spotted Congressman Santos leaving the Speaker's office earlier this morning. Santos telling our reporters he remains unbothered by a House Ethics Committee probe into his campaign. More than 2 months after she lost, Carrie Lake still thinks she could win the race to be Arizona's governor. A judge ruled against the former Republican candidate's attempt to overturn last year's election results, saying, quote, speculation is not evidence. But Lake telling a campaign-style crowd last night at a rally, she'll keep fighting.
It was rotten, and our election needs to be thrown out and redone. We want a new election.
The man accused of breaking into former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's San Francisco home and bludgeoning her husband, Paul, with a hammer, made a bizarre phone call from jail to a California news station. David DePapp ranting about far-right conspiracy theories and says he has zero remorse.
I have an important message for everyone in America. You're welcome. I want to apologize to everyone. I messed up. What I did was really bad. I'm so sorry. I didn't get more of them. It's my own fault. No one else is to blame. I should have come better prepared.
DePapp facing federal and state charges, he has pleaded not guilty. Appreciate your time, 10 Inside Politics. Hope to see you back here tomorrow. Casey Hunt picks up our coverage right now.
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.